This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.
Hi, my name's Sue Bloxham and I'm Professor of Academic Practice and Director of Education Research at the University of Cumbria.
Professor Bloxham, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Cambridge Assessment podcast series here today. We're investigating the mismatch between the policy and practice of assessment judgment in higher education. First of all, can you just set out your interest in assessment practice?
My background is in teaching and learning development, actually going back about 10 or 15 years, or even a bit longer than that, and it probably near 20 years, if I'm honest, became clear to me that actually, if you want to do things about students' learning, you've got to deal with the assessment, because that's what signals to them the curriculum. So that's why I got an interest in assessment, and it sort of moved on from there and become more and more focused as I've gone along.
You have a particular interest in underrepresented groups. Why?
During my career, I've watched a lot of the widening of participation in higher education. And what's become clear to me is some of the newer groups, the underrepresented groups, the students don't often or don't always have enough sort of what you might call cultural capital or support elsewhere to help them sort of learn to play the higher education game. And part of that game is tuning in to what we're looking for. It's quite elusive in some ways what tutors are looking for in assignments, and students have to learn that. So I kind of got interested in helping students understand what they had to do to achieve in higher education to give them a better chance of being successful.
And is it that underrepresented groups, whether that's the ratio between girls and boys, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's class, might not get the messages about what's expected of them?
I think that's true, but that's partly because those messages are so tacit. They're so ingrained in the practice of higher education. You know, youngsters whose perhaps parents have been there have got a better idea what an essay is all about than youngsters who haven't, not necessarily young people, older people as well. I do think that getting those messages over is difficult and comes through kind of dialogue, participation, imitating other people, not through just telling students that these are the assessment criteria.
So is there anything that can be done about underrepresented groups? Should we be concerned about them?
We certainly need to make sure that widening participation isn't just widening access, that helping youngsters or other people from underrepresented groups get into university is stage one, and we then need to think about how we support them achieving in their assessment to the best of their ability, rather than sort of assuming that once they're in the door, they necessarily are going to cope in just the ways of new students who perhaps have had more family, cultural, school support.
So they need to be mentored and nurtured.
Yeah, and actually I think there's partly that, but I actually think it's about the design of assessment, the processes for feedback that can help that happen. So I don't want them to have necessarily special treatment or extra mentoring, although, you know, I'm not saying we shouldn't do that, but I'm saying that actually we need to think about our assessment design and the processes we use to help students get a grasp of what's expected of them.
Now, another area of interest for you is quality and the impact of quality in assessment. How can teachers recognise if this particular answer, if this particular paper stands out?
Okay, I think this is one of the most difficult issues, and is the nub of the problems for students making the transition, is because higher education tutors are assessing very complex learning, particularly as students move through the levels of undergraduate and postgraduate study. And tutors have learnt what quality is through their own experience of being a student, perhaps being a researcher, being a lecturer, reading other people's work, and marking. And that's a very complex understanding that comes from that. It's often tacit. People don't necessarily know what it is that they see in a good piece of work. You know, you hear the old saying, I know a 2-1 when I see it. Now, the difficulty with that is communicating that quality to people outside that community who haven't had that experience. And I think that's been one of the things that education, higher education assessment research over the last 10 years has really been trying to grapple with.
And you have written a book, Developing Effective Assessment in Higher Education, that was extremely successful. Do you think perhaps because it helped people to understand the complexities of the assessment process?
I hope that was part of its success. I think the other reason was that we tried a lot of texts in assessment have focused perhaps on what, you know, you might describe as the more sexy bits, the kind of assessment design, feedback. And I did try in that to kind of look at the whole cycle from module and program design and the assessment role in that right through things like preparing students for assessment, marking. Not many actually texts tackle marking at all. And the management of assessment, assessment committees, external examining, all those sorts of things. And I think probably looking at the whole cycle might be one of the appeals of the book.
Some people have talked about a loss of confidence in standards. Do you think there has been a loss of confidence? Because when people say they've got a first, you feel quite sorry for kids. They struggle through the system. And then when they achieve top grades, people say, well, they're not really top grades anymore. Loss of confidence.
I'm going to be very careful what I say here, but certainly there are lots of questions are raised about it. And our ability to defend our standards is possibly something that we could do more about. There is absolutely no doubt that the ratios getting higher degrees has changed. And of course, that might be because we are getting better at teaching students. Over the last 10 years, most new lecturers have had to be trained to teach in higher education, which was never the case before. But it also may be to do with our modular structures that enable students to have a sense of how they're doing rather than things being left just for the final exams, which perhaps is a bit more difficult for students to know how well they're getting on. And also, let's be honest, that universities are under huge pressure to get higher. It's one of the ways they're measured in league tables. And the way that degrees are worked out for individual students, the combination of scores in different modules, to a certain extent there's pressure on universities to change those so that it may be that the higher grades come up in greater proportions because of the pressure that's put on them by league tables. And I have complete sympathy with that.
Do you, as an opinion former, as an author in this field, as a lecturer in this field, Professor Bloxham, think standards should be trusted? Do you think that people are right to question them, to perhaps not have confidence in them? How trustworthy are the standards that are dished out today?
I would rather focus on how well are we assuring that standards are comparable, that students and staff are consistent in their standards and understand them, than trying to make that judgment. You know, higher education has changed so dramatically over the last 20, 30 years. Participation rates, the range of subjects we teach. So I would definitely wouldn't want to say that standards are necessarily lowered. I think we're teaching things differently and we're recognising a much broader range of learning from students than perhaps just the kind of cognitive skills and knowledge that's associated with a degree, say, 30 years ago.
In the seminar today, investigating the mismatch between the policy and practice of assessment judgment in higher education for the Cambridge Assessment Network, there's been concern about the role external examiners play, or an interest in the role that external examiners play. Why is this?
Okay, there have been a number of studies, well, studies is the wrong word for it, really. There have been sort of official reports into external examining, and things like the Quality Assurance Agency have reviewed the comments that have come up through their institutional audits and found some weaknesses in the systems of examining, the possibility that examiners might not have experience of a broad enough range of universities, for example, or that there are inconsistent procedures within universities for dealing with their reports. So there have been those reports. They resulted in a group looking at them, and that group's report has now been turned into a new chapter in the Higher Education Quality Code. They have tried to really streamline the procedures. My interest has been really in how we actually help externals to understand what academic standards are and the kind of tacit knowledge and the provenance of their own standards, and that's a piece of research we've been involved in recently to look at that, which has produced some very interesting results.
Are we allowed to know what the results are yet?
We're actually at the stage of just negotiating the final report, so I'm having to be a little bit careful about that.
Now, you are interested within that interest of external examiners. You've looked at the framework, the assessments, the practice, the judgments. There's an awful lot to consider when you're thinking about, well, are we being consistent with all examiners across all examinations? So you have to have frameworks, you have to have standards. It's very rigorous, I would assume.
Well, one thing I'm going to talk about, the idea that I think from the quality assurance and registrar's point of view, we have what might be described as a perfect system of procedures to kind of guarantee consistent, reliable standards. My argument, though, is that the procedures we used in that system don't actually match the nature of the way we go about making judgment. For example, we expect assessment to be marked on a criteria base. The students are given assessment criteria that they have to achieve, and the assumption is that they're marked against them. But when we've listen to staff marking, they don't tend to do that. They tend to mark in a holistic way and come to an overall sense of what the work is worth. Then they might look at some of them, but not all. Some of them think they've got those standards internalized. They don't need to look at them. Others in our research looked at them to just check what they thought. So on the one hand, we're telling students their work is analytically marked. On the other hand, though, professional judgment, it's too difficult to mark analytically in that way. And in lots of spheres of professional life, people make judgments in a holistic way. So coming up with lots of standards and criteria might actually not be terribly good at quality assuring the actual practical nature of how we mark.
So it's the theory from the reality being separated.
Partly. I mean, one of my arguments is that there's different a sort of epistemology. In other words, the way people think about knowledge that underpins quality assurance is what I describe, I've taken the concept from elsewhere, as a techno-rational approach. The idea that you can set a standard, that it's fixed, that it's objective, it stays the same, people can understand it in the same way, as opposed to a more interpretivist approach, epistemology, which would say, actually, that standard only gets its meaning from the discussion and use of the people using it. And so it's sort of contingent on the situation.
If we're looking at consistency in standards or how people assess, then we come back to that question about the guidance. So the guidance has to be right, and it has to have the quality that people find it accessible, that they understand it, that there aren't too many complexities within it. Is that right?
I'd say that that is one of the real problems, because we've tried to write guidance in the form of standards and qualification descriptors and grade descriptors and rubrics, but my work with colleagues would suggest that actually those do not sufficiently I mean, one of the real things I'm going to say by the study we did with some experienced assessors is that they all talked, for example, about argument, the quality of argument in students' work, but when we asked them to rank individual pieces of work on that construct, they ranked them very differently. So the problem with explicit guidance like that is that we can perhaps assume too much, that we give too much power to it. On the other hand, I do think we need to give examiners and assessors in general guidance over the importance of calibrating their standards with other people, which perhaps we don't do enough of.
And so if we come back to the title of today's Cambridge Assessment Network seminar, investigating the mismatch between the policy and practice of assessment judgment in higher education, is mismatch a controversial word?
Is it a controversial word? I think not, because I think on balance what we have at the moment is enough checks and balances, and the fact that students do lots and lots and lots of different assignments. In the end, I don't think there's many students out there getting a degree classification that they aren't entitled to, if any. However, I think the fact that students are pretty fed up about assessment and the satisfaction scores for it are very low is probably because of this difficulty of matching the way we project it to them and the way we really do it.
So we'll all wait the results of your latest survey.
Well, yes, yes, okay. Yeah.
But nothing to tell us yet.
As I say, some of the preliminary ideas are coming out this afternoon, and I'm really looking forward to having other people's responses to it, because we certainly did find considerable difference between experienced assessors in the way they differentiated between student work, the way they assess student work on different criteria, and their overall judgment of individual pieces of work. We did find a lot of difference there. And what that means in terms of standards is something that we need to explore.
Well, Professor Sue Bloxham, thank you very much indeed for talking to the Cambridge Assessment Network podcast series today. I've enjoyed it very much. You're Professor of Academic Practice at the University of Cumbria. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
This is a podcast from Cambridge Assessment. For more downloads, visit cambridgeassessment.org.uk.